Welcome to the Just Love podcast, hosted by Wipe Every Tear. We hope this podcast inspires you to just love and to love justly.
Happy Tuesday, friends. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Just Love podcast. It's Alondra here. Today, I get the honor of interviewing Jennifer Zielinski, who is the executive director at the Idaho Anti-Trafficking Coalition in Boise, Idaho. Jennifer has great insight on what trafficking in Idaho and the states looks like, so I am so excited for all that she is going to share. Hi, Jennifer. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today. I am so excited to hear from you and to learn a little bit more about Idaho Anti-Trafficking Coalition and what y'all do, what your mission and your heart is. So to get started, I wanted to ask you a fun question. If you could trade places with anyone in history, who would it be and why?
I love this question. I think it's an amazing opportunity to share passions maybe we have in our advocacy efforts, but I just love Susan B. Anthony. I love just the activism and really pushing for human rights through women's rights and through rights for voting. I believe that her activism and all of the data collection and the reporting and her studies, just looking into equal rights, has a lot to do with women and servitude and all of the oppression, especially with domestic workers, and really relates to a lot of the activism that's happening right now regarding human trafficking. I just love that she paved the way alongside a lot of other amazing leaders, but the activism for women's rights is just such a critical one.
I love that so much, and I feel like it reflects your heart so well for human trafficking, like you're saying, for women's activism. I feel like that's a good segue into hearing about how you learned about human trafficking and how that led you to starting Idaho Anti-Trafficking Coalition.
I've known about human trafficking for years and really have just had a heart for international efforts, especially related to culture, those who are oppressed, certainly extreme poverty, and as a result, leading to human trade. And that has always been on my heart, just as far as a global epidemic. And once the evolution of just even the studies and learning about what it looks like in certain parts of the world, especially those who have been impacted by war and then impacted by just even something like buy a bride or the dark web, just accessing individuals for the purpose of personal gain, whether it's through labor trafficking or sex trafficking. And that is just something I've always been really mindful about and researched a lot. Spent years just looking into more of the human rights aspect. And as the years evolved, recognizing that it wasn't just an international issue, that it was hitting closer to home. And then even on a personal note, we have an adopted daughter who at one point was placed in a residential care facility due to her severe mental and behavioral health issues and the need for a true system to provide appropriate services for her and our family. And while staying within that residential care facility, she was a victim of sexual abuse and exploitation. And so through that process, it really opened our eyes as a family, trying to navigate systems and looking at needs and especially the impact on her as she was abused before we adopted her as a baby. And then that translated into our home and our family, just trying to support her, love her, ensure that she felt safe, and really navigating the entire process through her eyes opened our eyes. And as we recognize that these efforts weren't really systemic here in Idaho and other states, they were already systemic. They have already taken over a complete system overhaul. There were efforts that have been launched and moving forward through trial and error, of course, but for the past 15, in some states, 20 years. And so as we were discovering that the lack of services here, but also just even the lack of identification, we took this opportunity to jump on board with a newly formed community-based organization. And the founder and one of the funders offered a position to me to really take it and launch this organization and kind of just lead the effort. So as far as just Idaho, wanting to really connect with others who have the same heart, have the same passion, believe in the same mission, who want to contribute or who are doing the same types of efforts.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that about your family. And I think that's amazing. Oftentimes, passion can be reflected upon just personal experiences. And mm-hmm. I think that's amazing that you took that and you ran with it and you were so open and willing to just run with Idaho Anti-Trafficking Coalition. And correct me if I'm wrong, but they're one of the few nonprofits that's doing something locally in Idaho about human trafficking.
Yeah, that's correct. We do have efforts here. And I really want to highlight that this has been a huge team effort. There are other organizations doing similar work. I would say the majority either started internationally or still focusing their efforts internationally. Our goal was to create a coalition of community. So whether that's state agencies or local agencies or other nonprofits or churches or businesses, really anybody who wanted to come alongside us and then really agree on the needs. You know, what do we need to do as a state to really combat this, but to change the systems, to change our approach, to remove the stigma, those barriers. So really, it is the only organization that is doing it on that level. So working on policies, ensuring that as we're identifying those gaps or those barriers, to really support individuals. And that would be through prevention. It would be through direct services. And then removing barriers for that ongoing continuum of care. So the partnerships are critical. Idaho mm-hmm. Anti-Trafficking Coalition is unique in that it is the only nonprofit that provides direct services through trauma-informed care, as well as safe housing, and then program work through training, education, awareness, and then advocacy. So it's unique in that it's kind of a all-in-one inclusive organization, but certainly highlighting the importance of our partnerships, especially as we're working through trial and error ourselves. You know, what does it look like in Idaho? What are those needs? And then expanding statewide so we're not just excluded and working within the region that we're working.
I love that you guys work with policy because there's only so much we can do as individuals and only so many efforts that we can push forward. But without like policy and without any of that, it can be really difficult to move forward or to really help women. And also that you guys focus so much on prevention. Mm-hmm. That is amazing. You mentioned that you guys have direct care and safe houses. Could you go a little bit more into that and kind of expand on what Idaho Anti-Trafficking Coalition does to combat human trafficking here?
Yeah, so we have three major program areas. The first program area is your very traditional nonprofit efforts. So it started, you know, with identifying partners, identifying communities, individuals, especially just in expanding the dialogue, removing the stigma and creating conversations that, though uncomfortable, important. And so that we wanted to get into our churches. We wanted to get into our schools, our after school programs, especially hitting anywhere that we know we're faced with some at-risk populations as well. And so we needed those partnerships. And so the programs are anyone who requests a human trafficking 101 training. We provide online safety trainings, identifying key terms such as grooming. What does it look like? What's the terminology in Idaho? Because Idaho's culture is very different. And so recognizing that as well. So those efforts are really related to your standard program effort. And then to take it a step further, we launched a trauma clinic. It's an outpatient trauma-informed and trauma-specific clinic that provides counseling, case management, family and group counseling, and peer support for adults. And so we serve all ages and gender. We also provide that mentorship, one-to-one peer support, and then really, really moving forward with volunteer opportunities for individuals so that those who want to get involved can jump on board and really invest their time into this movement. And then beyond that, safe housing. We've been in the process of the reconstruction and construction and getting Solace House moving. This has been a 2-year process for us. And so launching Solace House has just been a lengthy advocacy effort as well as an effort to really support individuals. And that's geared towards minors from about 11 until they age out at 18. And then we launched Harbor House, which is an emergency transition home. And that house really went through some trial and error as well. Recognizing the needs are so individual, but also our funding can cause a barrier in the needed outcomes where personally we recognize this individual may not meet the criteria that's really specific in our grant funding. And so looking at where the grant might say a requirement of 3 months of housing, the individual might access a week or a month, and then we might not see that individual for months. And so being able to keep those doors open and ensure that the safety and the ongoing supports are there, we're having to really restructure the way that we provide our housing, especially for adults. So we're really looking for opportunities to launch more of a drop-in center model, which allows for crisis care and then potentially transition into more of a stable, safe housing. And that's something that we're developing as we speak. Really just spent the last 2 years analyzing what's working, what isn't working, and then need, because these efforts are so brand new. We don't have a model in Idaho to duplicate. So we're the model. We're the ones that are paving the way. We're really having to build that plane while it's in flight. And so doing that, there's a couple of times where we've had to say, that might not be the approach we need to take with this. We really do need to start honoring people or serving people this way. So we have the 3 major program areas, and then policy and advocacy is just a critical piece. Like you said, if we don't have current laws that support individuals, especially victims of crimes, then we're going to continue down this path of being reactive. We will only be able to meet people after that punitive process. And we certainly don't support that. We support the prevention part. We support identifying individuals appropriately and then ensuring that through a diversion opportunity, that there's housing and services and supports and viewing them as, you know, an individual who has the right to these services rather than penalizing them and criminalizing them, especially because of stigma, you know, or this is the way it's always been. This is how our court system works, or this is how probation and parole works. For us, we respect that and they're key partners, but we want to backtrack and get to a place where we're more supportive, that we really do understand the depths of this level of trauma and the need. So it really does take a lot of policy, legislative work. We have some amazing policymakers and legislators that support us in our efforts. So we're about 2.5 years old. So we're still in that infancy stage, though the need is so significant.
Wow, you guys are real trailblazers in this work. And we honor you guys so much for all the work that you're putting into making sure that the people that you come into contact are honored and that their dignity is maintained and that you respect them and just love them, mm-hmm. love them where they're at. And maybe even like a decade ago, it was common for victims of trafficking to be labeled as the criminals and mm-hmm. to be punished for something that they were not, it wasn't their fault, you know, it was something that they were coerced into doing or tricked. And so I think that's amazing that you guys are doing such a great job at making sure that these victims are seen as that and that they're being rescued and restored wholly as a person, which I can tell that from what your houses are doing and just all the work that y'all are putting in. You mentioned that you do human trafficking trainings mm-hmm. and that you're trying to take those into churches and schools. What do you feel like the response to that has been in the community here?
Getting in the door to more community settings such as churches and our programs, especially even like businesses, hasn't been a difficult journey, but getting into our school districts has been really difficult. This is not a topic that most people are comfortable with, especially in how it is provided to children or young adults. And so between three trainings that we provided within three high schools, I would say almost 300 students that we were able to present to. And it was remarkable. Their response was great. They were so respectful and engaged, a lot of questions, and the follow-up was great. We were able to educate their staff, and then there were some parents who attended, but the students specifically, they were able to really reflect on some experiences, provide us with some feedback and input, which is so critical because, of course, we find that they're experts. You know, they're the ones that use these apps. They're the ones that are online more so than adults are, though we know that whether you're a child or an adult, you can certainly fall prey. But they've been able to really give us some key insight, just how blatant traffickers or predators can be online, and then the settings as well. So the outcomes have been amazing. It was so well received. So we're really trying to duplicate that, take the positive input and feedback and then model it throughout the state so that we really can expand in those efforts. We're also encouraging young adults to take this on as an effort in their communities, you know, whether it's through certain events, maybe annual events, or maybe advocacy groups or support groups within their community and even age groups so that they can rally, become experts, and then start supporting those around them, especially if they start to pay attention to those signs and symptoms. And staying safe themselves, recognizing that, you know, this is a digital time, so we all use our cell phones and our iPads and our computers, and we're all online. It's such a dire need to educate on safety. So rather than, you know, shame anyone for being online, we want to educate individuals, especially our young adults, on how to do so safely. And that is just through programming and through even your control settings or who you're communicating with and setting some personal standards or even family standards of how we utilize these devices. And so that's been well received. And then the partnerships that we have with our community professionals, such as law enforcement, or even our businesses like hotels and convenience stores and so on, we've really wanted to educate them so that that'll transpire into the way that their staff and the information that they're giving out to the communities. And then within the churches, it's been so well received. A lot of movement there, especially when this first started, because it seems to be a natural place for human trafficking efforts internationally. A lot of faith-based communities have taken this on as an international issue, especially as they're pursuing the support in maybe even rebuilding communities and towns and assisting in clean water access or building orphanages or, you know, things like that. So many of our churches have recognized the need for supporting these efforts around human trafficking. So once the local churches and actually up north and even in East Idaho, they've jumped on board to supporting the effort more so locally because there's an effort that's really pushing for it and also pushing for accountability. I think that everyone needs to be a part of this. Everyone needs to contribute. I don't think it should fall on one organization, a nonprofit, or even a church. I do believe that it takes an entire state to change the way that we approach this, the way that we approach victims, and then how we support individuals ongoing. So it has been very well received. We don't have an issue yet as far as political or religious or cultural. It almost seems to be unanimous that, no, this is a fight worth fighting and a support that we can all stand behind. So it's been very positive.
That's really encouraging to hear and to learn about that, especially just how students in the schools have responded to it. You know, they're the generation that's coming, they're coming after us. And if they're equipped and if they know, then things will actually begin to shift and change if they have the tools and if they can spot human trafficking, if they know how to stay safe on the internet, because I don't see the internet being something that will ever go away again. And so it's really encouraging to hear that. And it's amazing to see how communities come together and realize that something is just blatantly wrong and not okay and are willing to work towards ending that. So I love that so much. And so a lot of misconceptions on human trafficking. Typically, like in the States, it can tend to be like in the movie Taken, where someone is taken abroad and it's like this big thing, which I'm not saying doesn't happen, but what have you seen be like, this is the most common like lure into trafficking, or what has been your experience so far?
Yeah, I would say the number one misconception in Idaho, and I do believe that it's a cultural thing throughout the country, but certainly what we're facing is related to stigma. We still in Idaho use the prostitution laws as a default. So automatically we're penalizing, automatically we're labeling, we're putting the criminal stamp on an individual because we've already tagged that case or that situation to prostitution, which already just gives an illusion that the individual is doing this willingly or they're in control, they're profiting. And so when you attach it to a law that if individuals would actually thoroughly read through it, they would see it's very similar to human trafficking laws, but they have to expand the law itself. And it does hold buyers accountable. It holds sellers accountable. But when we attach individuals to the prostitution law, especially here, we're really only addressing the individual, the victim. And so we're really pushing for efforts to remove that process and approach and identify that we actually have a human trafficking law where it's defined clearly. So federal, and now Idaho has it in state, which has only been in effect since July 1st. An effort that we jumped on board with and supported to really get the definition of human trafficking as a law in Idaho, but also allow for a safe harbor for diversion opportunity for minor victims. And the misconception that we can identify minors as prostitutes, it is mind-blowing to me that we're still there in Idaho. So removing those misconceptions, really advocating for the understanding of human trafficking, what that does look like, what defines force, fraud, or coercion, and how those things can be proven without an individual's testimony. And that's a pursuit as well. You know, stop re-victimizing and stop traumatizing and re-traumatizing individuals and stop criminalizing them through this process, because it's the only process you know. So the misconception that individuals are prostitutes, still using that terminology, it's one of the biggest ones that we're seeing here. And the stigma around sex trafficking, that it just doesn't happen here. Most people deny it or are just blatantly shocked by it. So it isn't on their radar. I would say that, like the movie Taken, that's still part of that illusion as well, that it's just a kidnapping or it's an international issue. We often get the question about human smuggling, which I think is where a lot of people are misunderstood, that this is not about a human smuggling issue. This is right here. In our state, in our country, these are individuals born and raised here. The majority of them in Idaho are either native or from the surrounding states, where traffickers are just coming in and out and they're profiting. They're profiting off of that solicitation that's happening online. And then the blatant exploitation of either children or adults. So the misconceptions around that old law or identification of prostitution, it's a big, huge barrier for this movement.
Yeah. I moved to Idaho from Phoenix, Arizona, which is, it feels like 10 years ahead of Idaho in anti-trafficking efforts, and it's just very different. So I definitely understand, but I love that you guys are changing that stigma and that you're doing something about it. You're not just watching it happen and letting those beliefs just sit with everybody, but you're willing to change those and to say, no, like we can't, this hasn't been working. Let's find what's going to work and what is going to truly heal a person from their trauma and from their abuse. And how can we prevent this from happening? Because there's many children out there that are growing up with social media and growing up with all these new technologies and things that, you know, generations before us never had. And so I think that may even be something that is hard for them to believe and why they're in denial almost of this being something that's happening locally. Kind of going off of that, do you have a specific story or something that y'all have been able to encounter with a victim or a pimp or whatever the case may be in the last 2.5 years?
Yeah, we've had quite a few. It's definitely an effort that you can't prepare for, especially when you don't have anything to compare it to. Idaho is so unique, and the individuals that we've really encountered are all on a different level. You know, some had maybe been victimized or abused years prior, some during, some efforts that have happened in our communities, and then reacting to some of the emergency needs currently. So we're really experiencing various levels of what human trafficking looks like. And as far as impact or a personal story or something that really stands out, we did a fundraiser that was an online opportunity to share testimonies and stories for 2 days straight on a local radio station. And it was so impactful. We weren't sure, you know, how are we going to really capture this, but honor individuals and make sure that we are ensuring their dignity and their privacy and respecting their journey. And spent an entire day interviewing. As we're doing so, the biggest takeaway was how empowered each individual felt. Most of them, it was their own experience. One was a mother of a child who was a victim of sex trafficking here. And another one was a relative of somebody who fell prey to labor trafficking here locally as well. And the stories were, they were remarkable and they were so powerful, but each person felt empowered and provided feedback that they've never been able to tell their story before, you know, and especially not having a platform where this conversation has ever been brought up. No one really knew terminology such as human trafficking. So though it may have felt wrong or an individual knew it was wrong, they didn't know why. They didn't know what it was. And then it was always attached to some other criminal activity or some other victim crime, such as sexual assault or domestic violence or exploitation. And with that, we weren't able to ever really give people a voice in the past. And so natural efforts like this, we would have to speak on behalf of individuals. And I still feel very strongly about that because I'm very mindful of not exploiting individuals as well, but giving them a platform to say whatever it was that they wanted to say, never disclosing who they are, but sharing such a unique story. And it highlighted how different the situations are, how different human trafficking looks, and really just giving them the empowerment and the opportunity to share something that's so impactful, but for the purpose of change, for the purpose of contributing to a movement that their experience now, you know, we remove that idea that it was solely an evil or horrific process, but to then turn it into something that really can improve someone else's life or contribute to the change of a system and the communities. And so their stories were impactful. And it is definitely something that stuck really deep with a lot of us who encountered it, especially one-to-one. So very, very much an amazing opportunity to give individuals a voice.
Wow. I think a lot of times we can get stuck in that, or we make the mistake of when we identify a victim, leaving them as a victim. And instead of saying, no, this was your past and yet you're a victor, like, and that is so empowering to somebody to say, this is something that you went through and we acknowledge that and we want you to live life to your fullest and share your story and to hear that y'all are about empowering women, because really that shows them that they are loved and that they matter, that their voice matters, that they're not just another name to add to statistics, but that they are a person, that they are loved and that they have value, that their dreams and all of that matters so much, and that people care, that there's people out there that care about them. Obviously, you have a lot of experience and you are just a wealth of knowledge. And so I would love if you could share with our listeners a piece of advice for anybody that wants to get involved either here in Idaho or just in the States in general.
Yeah, I think that most people do want to get involved. And I love that it is like it's embedded in us. And I love that it doesn't have or need a political party or, you know, a specific religious group or even just a division or a separation in any movement. I think that human trafficking, it speaks for itself. And there's nothing worse than selling an individual for somebody's pleasure and profit. And the depths of it, it doesn't get any worse than that. It just doesn't. And I would say, do your research, become an expert, understand the depths of it. Really understand that it is not a pretty effort. It's not one where we get to just sit down and braid someone's hair and paint their nails and live happily ever after. It really is an effort that takes a commitment for the long haul. Your heart's going to get broken. You're going to see things that you don't like. You're going to experience what trauma looks like. And it goes far beyond trauma and any other victim crime. It is so multi-layered. You have an individual who is owned by somebody, used, abused, mentally, physically, emotionally, forced, and probably through some form of blackmail or threats. And then you have the other dynamic of an individual who is now purchasing that person, who gets to do whatever they want with that person. And you have that level of trauma and abuse, and that's emotional and it's physical and it's psychological. And so you have so many layers and so many dynamics that most people who want to get involved struggle to understand the dynamics of what it could possibly look like or why individuals do what they do, how they react, maybe to how they would react to services and supports. Why do they stay? And, you know, why can't they just ask for help? So many of those questions. So I would encourage anyone who wants to get involved to really research, become an expert in human trafficking locally in the United States, as it's so different than internationally. Our efforts here are impactful in that giving that complete understanding, the perspective of somebody who has fallen prey, the perspective of a parent who's experienced this with their child, and then even with professionals who may only see behaviors, who may only see the aggression and the anger, who may only see that type of trauma. And so it's critical to understand how many layers, just even how disassociative an individual might have to be, or if they fall in love with their pimp or trafficker. What does that look like and why? And so removing the whole selfish part of why we're wanting to get involved and why we're doing this, remove our own expectations, remove our own understanding. And simply if we haven't experienced it, we really don't know. And it is about the respect and the patience and a revolving door. It is not about setting parameters, timelines. It's not setting those boundaries or barriers, because that's a complete setup for failure. So I would say anyone who wants to get involved to absolutely get involved. And that's just through serving or giving, if it's time, if it's monetary, if it's through awareness. I typically just tell anyone, however you see fit, you know, how you can contribute. It honors the whole idea of a coalition. It honors a movement. It honors community. So my only advice would be to really credible information, credible resources. We have plenty on our website. I know that every organization that's taken this on has amazing resources and information, plenty of documentation, data, things to study, research. And by doing that, you'll gain an understanding that gives you the tools to really be a good advocate or a good supporter.
That's so good. I totally agree. I love that you emphasized education and getting all your information before you just jump right on in, and also just doing what you can. When I learned about human trafficking in my freshman year of high school, there was not very much that I could do, like on the ground or really anything because I was 14. So there's a nonprofit that allowed you to write letters to girls in their care. And so I did that. Really, it's whatever and wherever you're at, like you're not too young, you're not too old. You're capable of being able to do something if that's what's on your heart. We will have Jennifer's information on our show notes, and also you can visit idahoatc.org for more information if you want to get involved with them and get involved locally if you're from Idaho. But yeah, thank you so much, Jennifer. I really appreciate your time and you sharing all that you know with us. I'm sure it's going to change so many lives and people are really going to find a lot of great information from this episode.
We're honored that you reached out to us. We love opportunities like this, and anytime, reach out. Our website has updated information that's helpful. We have a live ongoing Facebook page. It's a really good opportunity to see local and national updates, news articles, especially as it relates to the efforts. What are some of our surrounding states or other states doing, but what are we doing as well in Idaho? And we try to capture it as much as possible. And then just opportunities to support people. So anyone, just feel free to reach out. And thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much for taking the time to tune in to the Just Love podcast with our wonderful guest, Jennifer Zielinski. If you'd like to learn more about the Idaho Anti-Trafficking Coalition and how you can get involved, you can visit their website at idahoatc.org.